This episode of Fermented Adventure the Podcast is sponsored by Brewskits, handcrafted dog treats made from spent beer grains, oats, barley, and rye. No chemical preservatives, a great source of fiber, and packed with protein. Visit brewskits.com to see the full selection of treats for your dog and your cat. Receive 15% off, no minimum purchase, on your first order by typing in lowercase FA2024 at checkout. Cheers! Hello, ladies and gentlemen, craft spirit enthusiasts, and those interested in the intoxicating world of craft distilleries, cideries, meaderies, wineries, and the occasional foray into breweries. It's Rich Shane, and welcome to Fermented Adventure, the podcast, where we bring you the fascinating people that are making the mash, fermenting, distilling, bottling, pouring, and delivering to you some of the finest libations in the world. Before we get started, here are a few housekeeping items. Thank you for bringing the podcast into wherever you are and whatever you're doing. We truly are grateful that you have chosen to listen and make us part of your day. It would mean the world to us if you left a 5-star review. This helps us climb in the rankings, and it makes it easier for others to find us. Don't hesitate to leave us your comments as well. If the podcast didn't meet your expectations, tell us why. We're always striving to improve. You can find us at fermentedadventure.com. We are on Instagram and Facebook as Fermented Adventure. Email us at fermentedadventure@gmail.com. All right, FA Nation, let's meet our guests. She's Camille Coley. I'm Rich Shane, and this is Fermented Adventure, the podcast. Camille, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, we get to talk Sewanee Spirits today, and there is so much about what you do and how you produce this amazing spirit. We tried this at the Drink, Eat, Relax event, the Das Best Oktoberfest in the Maryland Fairgrounds, and Dawn and I left raving about Sewanee Spirits. So I'm so glad you're here to tell us, how did Sewanee Spirits get started?
Yeah, Sewanee is kind of a brainchild that was produced over an evolution of different ideas. So I originally started really wanting to create a restaurant around Gullah and Geechee culture. And if you're not familiar with the Gullah Geechee people, they come from the Carolinas, Georgia, and Florida. And these folks were basically some of the early enslaved peoples that really established the colonial economy through Carolina gold rice. And so I had been, you know, sort of researching and studying the culture, learning about my own connection to it, finding out that I am a Geechee descendant from my grandfather on my dad's side, and also learning more and more about whiskey and being exposed to rice whiskeys. And with learning about Carolina gold rice and learning more about rice whiskey, I thought, what if there was a rice spirit made from Carolina gold rice?
I'm telling you, just from the way you described your interim experience into this, this becomes such a fascinating tale, because I'm sure as you learn more, it becomes more exciting for you. Like you said, you now have a connection to the culture. Is there some place where your family personally or somewhere along the line had a history of distilling? And did they use this Carolina-based rice?
So it's interesting. I have a history of distilling on both sides of my family, my mother's side and my father's side. As a result of kind of learning more about Sewanee and learning more about what I wanted to do with this product and connect it to my family's culture, I started, you know, sitting at the feet of my, you know, elders and listening to stories. I learned that one of my great grandfathers had his own still in his basement right in East Street, D.C. And I found out that his mother had her own speakeasy out in the country. And on my father's side, my grandfather Who I'm connected, as I mentioned, through for with Gullah Geechee Heritage. I learned that he made spirits from berries, a lot of blackberry spirits on his side. So, yeah, that actually, as it turns out, it really is in my history to be creating spirits. I will say though, I don't haven't found anything connecting us directly to making spirits from Carolina gold rice. So I guess that comes from my generation.
How did you start to develop this recipe for creating Sewanee spirits?
Yeah, it was really important to me to use an American style fermentation and distillation process. Rice spirits are often, tied to Asian cultures and Asian fermentation and distillation processes, namely using koji. But I really wanted to, because this is an American story, really use American style recipes. So this is actually a whiskey recipe, a bourbon recipe, but instead of corn and wheat, we're using rice.
So is the mash bill 100% rice? Is there barley in there anywhere? Is there any other grain that finds its way into the spirit bill?
Yeah, so what's really cool is that this is 100% Carolina gold rice. And we've been able to create something that is really pretty nuanced and complex for something that only has one grain making up its mash bill.
I can share, as I said, between Dawn and I, we raved about your spirit and the experience we had because it's really, for us, it's a very unique product, like nothing else we've had. We can compare it to certain things. We can compare it on the nose to a white dog or to a white whiskey. You can compare it, as I opened it, it has characteristics of a sake. Then you mentioned the koji, right? So it's also a maybe in a way a long distance cousin to a shochu. When you talk to people, how do you explain what the expectations are so that they get a better sense of what's going to be hitting their mouth and their palate, or do you just wait for the surprise?
Well, in the beginning, all I could do was wait for the surprise because we really didn't know what to expect as we were kind of doing our early prototypes and experimentation. And we were surprised that, what we found were these notes of like buttered popcorn or even kettle corn on the nose. And then when we tried it, we got some kind of earthy vegetal notes, but even some vanilla in there. And because of the yeast that we use, there are even some agave notes. And so the way I tend to describe it as it is, this is going to be more interesting than a vodka. It's going to be less scary or less intimidating than a gin, because we don't use any juniper or anything like that to flavor it. And it's not going to be as sweet as a white rum. So that kind of helps you kind of know where it might fit in those clear spirits. But it also sets you up for an experience that is pretty versatile.
I am certainly guilty, as charged, of I keep telling people, right in the beginning, with my excitement of sitting down and speaking with you, I kept saying Sewanee vodka. And Dawn kept saying, it's not a vodka. And there's so much to it, but is there that confusion to the consumer that they see that clear spirit and then they're automatically, their mind goes, oh, that's a vodka, right? Is that, I mean, there are challenges, I think, that what you're, working with daily to meet that consumer at a point where they are understanding what this is, right?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of consumer education that's been going along with the development of the spirit because it doesn't really live in a specific well-known category like vodka or gin or rum. And that's obviously largely because we don't have a lot of rice-based spirits outside of, the Asian rice spirits. So yeah, it has been a challenge, but I find that people are interested in learning and they're very curious about having a new flavor profile to work with.
So we're talking about 100% rice in the build. Talk about, this is something that's new. You've got a history of distilling in your family. How did you go through and saying, I've got this idea, it comes from this culture, I'd like to make this a full-blown business and start putting Sewanee out to the masses?
Well, I do have some entrepreneurship in my background as well. And I have worked with small businesses most of my sort of day job career. And so I was not necessarily scared. Maybe I should have been more scared, but I was not necessarily scared of learning what I needed to do to sort of bring this to life. And I was also very fortunate that I already had sort of a community within the spirits industry where I could ask questions and figure out how to build the correct, the right pro excuse me, the right partnerships to be able to bring this to life. And so as a result, I've been able to work with local distillers to help actually manufacture the product. So I don't have a standalone distillery yet. And I also have been able to work directly with farms in South Carolina that are co-located with Gullah Geechee people to bring that rice here to distill.
When you speak to those farmers and you talk about the heritage and you talk about your desire to educate and provide this product to the masses, what is their response? Because I'm sure many people look at you and say, well, nobody really knows about this, or they probably would get very excited, but try to figure out how they can satisfy your needs as well.
Yeah, I mean, the farmers have been, well, so farmers are always looking for ways and looking for people, obviously, to be able to buy what they're growing. And so there's actually been a little bit of a surge right now in interest in Carolina Gold rice, but primarily from a culinary perspective. And so I've generally been met with excitement about the idea of creating more spirits. There's a pocket of this industry, this rice-based spirits industry in the Carolinas where they are using Carolina Gold rice. But most of those folks don't actually have a cultural connection to the rice. And so this has been a unique experience that I found most farmers have been really interested in working with me on.
You touched in the beginning of our conversation about a desire to open a restaurant or have some sort of culinary connection to the Gullah and Geechee foods. What was that for your? Do you have a? Are you a chef by trade? By I know you said you're an entrepreneur. I'm interested to know what your ideas were as you were kind of formulating them.
So not a chef by trade. I wanted to be a chef, but my parents said, you will go and get a science degree, and that is that. So but yeah, all my life really loved cooking. It was a passion of mine. And when COVID happened, I had the opportunity to really dive a lot more deeply into my family's history and learning a lot more about the Gullah Geechee culture. And as I was thinking about trying to come up with this restaurant concept, I really wanted to connect this passion that I have for cooking with this passion that I have for learning about my family's history. And so that's how those things kind of came together. And my father has always cooked traditional Gullah Geechee meals for us, whether we really understood the history or not. So our house was full of things like shrimp creole, which has connections back to West African red rice. He made us things like blackberry doobie and blueberry doobie, which is a dessert that folks in the Carolinas made in the summer because it used the stovetop instead of the oven, and so the house wouldn't get as hot. So these kinds of like historical connections to food have always kind of been in me, and I guess I just transferred it also into the development of Sewanee.
Brewskits, beer, grain, dog bones, brewskits, your dog will go wild. Brewskits, beer, grain, dog bones, a healthy alternative for your pup.
Brewskits are all natural and made in the USA. Visit brewskit.com. That's brewskit.com.
For you and what you're bringing to the consumer is you're bringing not only this race-based spirit, but you're bringing a history lesson and an understanding of part of our culture and development that has either A, been lost or is not readily available to how we get educated or what we are taught. And I think that's really important. And that is, to me, what makes this even more exciting, that I get to have more of a connection to a culture that is part of the fabric of the United States. And then
Absolutely.
you, like you said, you go deeper. You go into the foods and the history and the people, and you learn more about your family. And if I taste this, I have a connection now with you and
Yes.
all that goes along with your history. And that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's been very interesting to watch the product not only build connections, just with, strangers, people that I meet at festivals, things like that, but even within my family as well, as the stories are coming out more and people are kind of even creating more community within the family too, because of learning more history about the family and wanting to learn more about, where we come from.
What I, think about as you're saying that and the building that connection to the families and history, it's something of the same light the same process as something like Pituro. And Pituro is basically a Puerto Rican moonshine. And we've been introduced by Puerto Rico Distillery and Casa W Distillery to this Pituro. And what happens is I, meet somebody that's Puerto Rican. And I can say, hey, do you drink Pituro? And it's as if I'm having this conversation in a language that I'm not supposed to know about. And right there, it creates a connection. So, now with this Sewanee, that this rice-based distilled spirit, that I now have a connection to this culture. And we can have a conversation over spirits. And there's more that comes from that, right?
Yes, absolutely. And that is actually one of the goals. I mean, a big part of this is has been the recognition and understanding that a lot of Gullah Geechee land and property has been kind of at risk lately because of the fact that it's prized. It's right there on the water. And so there are families that are being, sort of removed from, not even sort of, they are being removed from their family lands. And to be able to talk about the spirits, and then be able to help people also understand why Carolina gold rice was so important and where those people are, and bring that back around to the fact that they need to be protected right now. It allows us to have a conversation that is not, bitter or anything like that, but where we can just sit and talk about what we all care about, which is family, which is our culture, which is our heritage, and how meaningful that is.
I think that is even more important today to have those discussions.
Absolutely.
To understand people and understand where we've all come from. And look, there have been a lot of things that have come out of COVID, many of them not so nice and not so great.
Right.
And some of the divisiveness that has brought about in our society, but what has come out of, and many stories like yours, where entrepreneurs like you sat down with an idea, just with a thought.
Right.
And it manifested into this very day where you and I get to speak and we get to talk about this wonderful spirit.
Absolutely.
And we have a conversation. I learn. I mean, this is my education. I now am learning something about something I had no idea about. And those listeners of the podcast go, wow, yeah. I didn't know that. I didn't know that existed. It's almost akin to me. And if you're thinking about the spirits, and this is one of the things I was thinking about, the whole Uncle Nearest story.
Yeah.
You know, there are these things that went on. And in the truth of the matter, you look at George Washington's distillery in Mount Vernon, many of those distillers and the ones that produced his spirits were slaves, were
That's
of
right.
African-American descent or came through enslavement. And they were the ones making it, but the names aren't recorded.
That's
the
right.
Names aren't there. And then you learn about this spirit. And we can have this, like I said, we can have this wonderful conversation. I can learn. I can go, I want to know more about this culture now. I want to know more, you know, about what you're doing and where can I enjoy more of it and all those things. Where can I find these foods that your father's making, or what time should I tell you will be over so we can make these Creole dishes?
Well, we should have a big dinner.
All right, we're on our way.
Pardon the interruption. Thank you so much for listening to Fermented Adventure, the podcast. Could you do us a favor? Hit that follow button. It makes it easier for others to find us, and it helps us climb in the rankings. Take a screenshot of the podcast, post it, tag us, and let everyone know that you listen to the Fermented Adventure podcast. Now, back to our podcast.
One of my favorite things to do is while we're talking and getting this, you know, having this conversation is opening this bottle and nosing it. This is now hitting the air for the first time. And it really, what pronounced to me when I opened it, I got more of a rice, like a sake. It just opened up in the air. That was just opening the bottle and pouring it.
Yep.
And as it sits, as it opens, you know, we're talking, I nose, and there's so many things that pronounce that come out of this. I still get that white dog whiskey kind of a nose.
Mm-hmm.
I get a very juicy, as you talked about, even like a tequila or an agave spirit.
Yeah.
I get a sour note to it, like a citrus sour note.
Yep.
To it.
Yep.
There was in the beginning, more so in the beginning than now, there was an earthy component to it, almost clay-like.
Minerality.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And now it opens up to this bouquet. And to your point, other than not having the juniper, there are some notes of this could be a gin if it just had those notes of juniper on the nose.
Definitely.
It's
and it
fun.
Looks, yeah, it is very fun because there's so many, because of all of those different notes that you can pick up. That is part of what allows it to be so versatile. And I do tend to tell people that, you know, if they like tonic, a really great way to kind of dip your toe into how to drink this would be with like a really nice tonic. Goes really well, or something citrusy.
All right. I'm thinking, all right, I try to build that cocktail, or I try to build that additional component to this as I'm sipping it. First of all, it's 90 proof.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those things that doesn't drink 90 proof that is going to come back to you real quickly. And I think if you consume a lot very quickly, you're going to wonder how you got there, because this packs a punch, I will tell you.
It does pack a punch. And yeah, I don't think people always anticipate that 90 proof kind of punch, but it doesn't punch you in the way that like vodka might punch you, where vodka kind of makes you gasp a little bit. This is a little bit more like that, that whiskey hug a little bit. And I kind of did want to keep that in there. So that's why we did leave it at 90 proof. I felt like a lot of the flavor that I really enjoy, about this spirit was lost when we, proofed it down to 80 proof. And so in order to keep it interesting, we left it at 90.
Through the tasting that I've been doing, what I'm really enjoying that I'm left with is this was never in a barrel, but it still carries those essences of a barrel, mm-hmm. even so that I would say if you use something like a heavy char, like a number four, mm-hmm. where you're getting those charred notes, almost like this tingly lemon lime, like it's there. There's a tingle, maybe like a Pop Rocks, right?
And yeah. On the back of your palate a little
yeah.
bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it just sits there. And it's a very, I'm going to say it's a very light pour. The body isn't there, but what the mouth experiences
yeah.
is there.
Right. Yeah, you do get some of those notes that remind you of a barrel-aged product. Some of the sweetness, some of the astringent notes that you're kind of talking about. It's that kind of thing that lends it to also be a substitute in, you know, your typical whiskey sour, or even we've worked with some bartenders that made a vieux carré with it. That was fantastic, and it was nice and light compared to a traditional vieux carré, but still had the flavor and what makes a vieux carré very interesting.
If I blind tasted this, meaning that I didn't know, you stuck this in front of me, I didn't know what it was, I'm thinking to myself, if I were to, this is what I'd be saying. Oh, this is a white dog. This is a white whiskey. Oh, wait, it just turned. It stopped. It's not that anymore.
Yeah. And that's why we didn't classify it as a whiskey either.
Right.
Because it's not, you know, it just simply is not. And, you know, similar to the fact that it's not a vodka and it's not a gin, it kind of lives in its own category yet to be named.
How did you explain this to the TTB? What was that conversation like? Because I'm sure they are like, well, this is a whiskey. Well, no, it's not. Oh, this is a vodka. No, what was that?
It's in the distilled specialty spirit category.
Okay.
So that's how we explained it to them. And so that's why the recipe is on the bottle. And you see, it's distilled from 100% Carolina Gold Rice. And we intend to maintain, you know, a heavy emphasis on the use of Carolina Gold Rice as we continue to build out our product line. We anticipate releasing a barrel-aged product, which I'm hoping will be our sort of really, truly signature product. It will be named after my grandfather, Clue. And we intend to make it, you know, very Sea Island focused, but that should be towards the end of this year, this calendar year, or early 2025. In the meantime,
just let us know where we line up for our first samples of that. Because I'm thinking, it, as you're explaining this, there are so many ways to take this. Mm-hmm. You could take this base and infuse it with fruit or mm-hmm. citrus. Mm-hmm. You could do a seasonal release where you're adding botanicals or adding other things to create a whole new flavor profile. You could put it in a barrel. You could put it in a secondary finish.
Absolutely.
This, the possibilities are endless. But what you're starting out with is a delicious spirit that is just unlike anything you're going to try.
Thank you. I mean, we're very excited. Very excited.
Well, you should be. I'm glad we met at the Oktoberfest, and You know, I think people's, you tell me, because I know how I reacted, but what is some of that feedback? What are those aha moments for you, Camille, that say, you know what, all this time, all this effort, all this research, this has been worth it?
Yeah, well, I mean, Oktoberfest was really cool because it was actually our first festival. We're very young as a company, just over a year and a half, or almost a year and a half old. So we're very young. The amount of sort of rapid real-time feedback was incredible to get. And we got to learn a lot about how people react to the product and view the product. And we heard things like flavors of gooey marshmallow. I think you said that, Rich. We got a lot of vanilla. People found it to be smooth. I know people don't really love that word in the industry, but we took it to mean that sort of what you were saying earlier, very drinkable, and it doesn't hit you, you know, as scarily as something that you might get in another spirit category. And so it was really nice to kind of get that kind of feedback, but then also have the interaction and being able to tell our story to a lot of people, get people interested in what Carolina Gold is as a product, what the Sea Islands are and the Gullah Geechee people, and just really being able to interact one-on-one with people has been really, really great for us and really fun.
Well, you mentioned you're a still fairly young company. How do people find these bottles with this wonderful spirit in it?
So we are still working on bringing it to the shelves. But we recently have entered into distribution in Oregon, which may sound crazy since we are based in Maryland. And this is a South Carolina, Georgia, Florida kind of product. But actually, I have a significant history in Oregon. I grew up there, and I've got my dear friends acting as unofficial brand ambassadors out there and working with a wonderful restaurant named Epilogue Kitchen. Was able to find a distributor out there, actually, and we're going to be getting started very soon. So it would be available at any retailer in Oregon within the next few months. And then subsequently, well, really not subsequently, in tandem, we are working on Maryland distribution.
All right. So we got to come to Maryland. Do you do any direct to consumer shipping just yet? Is that in the works?
That is in the works. It's not available yet. Again, because we're so young, we are kind of in that stage of bringing it to the shelves for people.
Are there places like what we experienced? Are there opportunities that you're going to be featuring, tasting, and just yes, doing right that those sales direct to the consumer?
Yeah. So we will be going to some additional drink, eat, relax events this year. We intend to be repeats at the Das Oktoberfest, and also looking at events in Jacksonville, Florida, and Atlanta, Georgia.
All right. You're bringing it all. You're coming with the fury, aren't you? I mean, look, I find what's going to happen is, first of all, you're such a delight to speak with, because just the information that I get to learn and look, it's your brand, but the way you just bring it to the consumer. I mean, that was also part of coming to where we found you and the interaction, the conversation. And look, it doesn't hurt by the fact that you get to meet a lot of drunk people too. And you get to see
professional drinkers.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. See, I love how diplomatic you are, but hey, look, you're going to these Oktoberfest things, like, you know, everything in moderation, but I just try to wait for all the other cars to leave the parking lot before I get on the road.
Fair enough.
They are lucky to have you, you know, with the relationship that you're making with Drink, Eat, Relax, because I think that whatever they're doing, and they're a great organization, but whatever they're doing, you're helping to raise that event to a higher level with what you're bringing here.
Thank you.
Is there anything we haven't spoken about on the podcast? Anything you want the listeners to know more about you or Sewanee?
Well, I guess I would just love to tell folks a little bit about who I am. I don't have a long history within the spirits industry, but I've been very passionate about whiskey since a dear friend took me to actually a drink, eat, relax event. And I started learning about whiskey and how you can have a whiskey tasting in the same way that you have a wine tasting, and that there are flavor notes and it can be just as nuanced as that. And I think that that's something that I hope people keep in mind as they taste our product, that this is a product that is interesting and it has lots of different flavor notes, and you should be excited to pick out what different flavors you can get out of it. And I think some of that comes also from the fact that I have a background in science and I love to experiment. As a result, I won't get into all those details.
You mentioned tastings, and I think what would be fun is to find, let's say, three whiskeys that you would taste, and then again, blind tasting this, that people, you don't tell them what it is, but you've already had this in mind that this is a whiskey. You know, that I think this is not anything.
That's a good idea.
Anything, Pat, you're not going to confuse this with being a single malt. You're not going to confuse this with being a Scotch or an Irish whiskey. But I think there's an opportunity where you can introduce this and not tell anybody what this is and see what the take is. Very similar that you can compare this to a clear spirit. And let's say you do a vodka tasting, and I have done vodka tastings where we've tasted, you know, a Russian vodka and an American based vodka, and let's say a Finnish vodka. But, you know, you can kind of, this becomes the outlier. Yeah. And as your palate gets used to that particular thing, what is the experience for people? What do they learn? What does the palate tell them it is? And I think that would be a fun thing to do, because
that sounds like a great experiment.
This is so unique. It's so much fun.
That's right up my alley.
All right, let's do it.
Okay.
You know, we have a good friend of the podcast, Sonia Hunt, and
I know Sonia.
Yeah. So if you know Sonia, a lot of that tasting, she does tastings that might be right up her alley to do. And as you expand, I know ABV Jobs. She can help you fulfill some of those parts that you need to. So take away that you're not always doing those. Camille, this has been so much fun. I just want to thank you for your time today. Thank you so much for being a friend of Fermented Adventure.
Thanks again for having me.
Yeah, we can't wait to see what that the growth of Sewanee, you know, is, and Sewanee Spirits. And we'll be in line for the barrel. We'll be in line at Dad's house. You got to get us the address so we can come for dinner. But if you're in Maryland, anywhere near what you're doing, get to that tasting in Jacksonville. Look up Drink, Eat, Relax. Look at what they're doing, because this is one of those experiences you don't want to miss in your life. And
yes, come see us. We can't wait to meet you.
Can't wait to meet you, because we got to meet you. And this is what happens when you meet somebody like Camille.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have an awesome day.
Thanks. You too, Rich.